This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Corporate Service Supply and Manufacturing, a DJI Enterprise dealer providing DJI equipment and support for law enforcement, public safety, construction, and other commercial users of unmanned aerial systems. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/css. And by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the uavdigest.com/goengineer. You're listening to episode 259 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Fort Washington, the flood zone, Pennsylvania. We've been dealing with a lot of weather around here, Max, and more weather on the way. And thoughts go out to all the people who are going to be having to deal with Florence over the next couple of days.
Yeah, big hurricanes are no fun at all. So, in fact, we've got a story that kind of touches on that, but that's deeper into the show.
So, other than that, we should probably get started. We've got a battery-powered drone. This was from Drone Mama with the comment of lots of batteries. A triple-powered hybrid drone fuel cell included. Fuel cell for you, huh, Max?
Mm-hmm.
Yet another Amazon drone patent. Well, that's typical news for the week. More industry consolidation, flying robots and intelligent architecture, and the impulse to deploy drones after a hurricane. Now, it's kind of funny, Max, how just before this story, I was educating someone whose father flew a drone, a quadcopter, and got it stuck up in a tree and was saying, oh, how dangerous could it be? And then I proceeded to tell her that, you know, it could be dangerous if it flies into a airplane or prevents a fire bomber. And she's like, oh, that doesn't happen. So I proceeded to bring up, two or three articles immediately in her immediate vicinity of Southern California, all about, and she said, oh, there's more to this than I thought. So it's kind of important. It reminded me that we're still in the job of educating everybody about UAVs. You know, this is someone who knows I podcast about UAVs all the time, but it suddenly became concrete to them because of the incident with their father and the other reality check. So we want you to fly safe. We want you to fly well and be an advocate for the industry, but we should get started. Well, our first story comes from Drone Mama. Impossible Aerospace, founded by former Tesla engineer, has launched a new drone with a two-hour flight time and lots of batteries.
It does have a lot of batteries. This is the US-1. That's the model, the US-1 quadcopter. It comes from Impossible Aerospace. And they claim it has a two-hour flight time in... The way that they accomplish that is by, well, filling this with so many batteries that kind of the batteries are the structure. The arms of the quadcopter, the body of the quadcopter, they're filled with these lithium ion cells. To me, they look kind of like little AA batteries, David, but there are a lot of them. And so that gives a long flight time. They say 2 hours.
I kind of like Impossible Aerospace as a name. Is a U.S. startup. It was founded in 2016 by Spencer Gore, who was a Tesla battery engineer. He has $9.4 million in Series A funding backed by Bessemer Venture Partners, Eclipse Ventures, and Airbus Ventures. You know, we were talking about this on Monday night. Airbus seems to be wanting to get into a little bit of everything, huh?
They are, and they're making financial commitments to do that as well. And here they are again. Well, this is a pretty good-sized quadcopter, 26-inch frame. They're pretty optimistic. I think, David, they say that this will be available in the fourth quarter of this year, 2018. Now, this is not a hobbyist or an enthusiast kind of quadcopter. This thing is projected to cost around $7,000 plus whatever accessories you need, camera, sensors, things like that. But they're not targeting hobbyists. They're targeting first responders, things like firefighters, police, the Coast Guard, things like that. Now, they have a YouTube channel, but the only thing that's up there right now is just a short promotional video. It's an older video, I think, but it's very brief and doesn't really say much or doesn't really show much. But if you're interested in following along with Impossible Aerospace, you can subscribe to their YouTube channel. And I imagine they'll have some videos soon, especially, David, if they're looking to ship these things in a few months, in the fourth quarter.
We didn't really have a flight time, a first flight thing. So, you know, I want, you know, hopefully it's not vaporware, and we can assume that it's not. But yeah, fourth quarter. I mean, we're recording this the second week in September, so fourth quarter starts October 1st, which is 2 weeks away. So interesting. We'll see where this goes. But let's continue on. We've gone from all batteries and lots of them to a fuel triple threat drone. And this is from createdigital.org.au. World's first drone, a triple fuel threat. A powered triple hybrid propulsion system. Hydrogen fuel cell, battery, and supercapacitor. Okay, the word fuel cell means that this isn't my story, it's yours. So take it away there, Max Flight.
This is a fixed-wing drone, and this comes from researchers at the University of Sydney. Now, they've been working on this for 2 years. They started out with just batteries, then they integrated a fuel cell, and then they combined the fuel cells and batteries with the supercapacitors. What does the supercapacitor do? Well, they say that it provides load smoothing, and that has a positive impact on fuel cell life. But it also, they say, improves the dynamic response of the overall propulsion system. One thing, David, of course, if you've got a fuel cell, in most cases, these are hydrogen fuel cells. That's the case here. And, of course, that means you need hydrogen to power the thing, which means you need to store hydrogen somehow. Most of the things we see, I think, use like a compressed pressure vessel to store the hydrogen. And they ruled that out in this case because of difficulties with the high-pressure hydrogen tanks. And so instead here, they're relying on a metal hydride system for storing the hydrogen. There's a downside to that. It's very heavy relative to pressurized hydrogen tanks. So maybe that's an opportunity for some development. But, you know, the usual fuel cell advantage, long flight times, either just straight up long missions, or they mentioned that maybe if there's a mission that requires persistence over a fixed location, fuel cells are an option there, certainly more than just straight batteries. But the disadvantage is that, you know, it's a new technology. Hydrogen availability is an issue, and then there's the whole how do you refuel it aspect to it. But this is, I think, the first time, David, we've seen, you know, three different components of a propulsion system combined into some hybrid system like they've got here. But with just 2 years under their belts on this, I think maybe there's some other possibilities, some developments, some improvements that may lead to some interesting things.
Yeah, I see. I got all excited when I saw a supercapacitor and my brain read flux capacitor. I thought, wow, well, they've invented a time machine. Where's my DeLorean? But we have talked about multiple hybrid, you know, multiple power plants like gasoline fueling batteries, etc. But this is sort of a circular sort of pattern. So we will definitely see what happens going forward. So this was from our listener, Ken, on Slack. And it's an article from GeekWire.com. A drone that's an on-demand data server. A perfect patent for Amazon's ambition. An unmanned aerial vehicle data service patent. You know, Amazon wants to patent the universe, and we will give the typical Max Flight disclaimer, which says, just because they patent it doesn't mean it will actually ever happen. But this is kind of an interesting patent.
It is. Now, we've seen ideas for drones that maybe provide connectivity in disaster areas, or as well as areas that have no access. This is, it's kind of related, but it's a little bit different. And the idea here is that you might have a user, network user, that is in a low bandwidth situation, or even one where there is no connectivity. And the concept here is that you would basically call up one of these drones that would arrive, and perhaps it has communications equipment that would allow you to communicate with the drone, which would then relay it back to a central location. Or they even think about the possibility of the drone receiving your data and then flying away to some central data server, and then, you know, downloading your data at that point.
A data carrier pigeon.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't you love how I come up with these antiquity technologies to describe this modern stuff?
Yeah. What's new is old.
You can tell where my brain is. It's somewhere between the 20s and the 50s. But yeah, I like the carrier pigeon analogy. I mean, take my data, go send it someplace and store it. And I don't have to trust the cloud. So
now, Amazon also, in this patent, addresses an issue of security. One solution they have here is that if it's a situation where maybe you do want some extra security, then maybe when you request this service, instead of getting one drone, you get many drones, and they would come out to support you. But maybe when you are uploading data to the drones, maybe each drone gets a different chunk of data. So no one drone has all of the information, all of the data. So that's kind of a interesting approach to providing security, or enhancing the security, let's say, of this kind of data service drone.
Okay, and you know what that reminds me of?
No, I can't. I'm afraid to guess.
When Marine One takes off from the White House lawn.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Suddenly around it comes two other identical VH-3s, and they do something called the shell game. So after a while, you don't know which helicopter the president is on. So you've got a bunch of drones doing the shell game, so you don't know which drone has your data on it.
Oh, very clever.
What's old is new.
Hey, there we go.
Well, this is from UASmagazine.com. Precision Hawk strengthens position in energy and insurance markets. Precision Hawk has purchased Hazon Solutions, LLC, and Inspect Tools, Inc., and they specialize in energy industrial drone inspections.
Yeah, they do. This is an interesting move on the part of Precision Hawk. The Hazon website says that they are a drone service provider focused on critical infrastructure inspections for Fortune 500 utility and industrial clients. They say their primary focus is delivering inspection services to those companies with significant investments in critical infrastructure. And if you look at the you know, the about page and who makes up this company, there's a lot of U.S. Navy veterans in there. So that's kind of interesting. Inspect Tools is kind of similar in that they provide inspections for, they use the term energy asset owners. They do that globally. But Precision Hawk says their CEO, Michael Chasen, says, By combining these offerings, our customers will have access to extensive and industry-leading energy products and services, regulatory expertise, and a record of safe, secure, and compliant operations. But Precision Hawk, David, isn't stopping there.
No, they announced a partnership with Eagleview Technologies. They provide aerial imagery and data analytics. Their customers are governments, insurance, and commercial sectors. And they'll use Precision Hawk's global network of drone pilots to collect insurance claims using drone imagery. Now, Eagleview OnSite provides insurance customers with all the tools necessary to settle claims without ever going into the field, said Rishi Daga, Eagleview's CEO. As drones transform the way the insurance industry operates, making inspections safer, easier, and more cost-effective, Eagleview reinforces its commitment to drone technology to digitize manual workflows. Well, let's hear it for my industry.
Yay, insurance.
Yay, insurance.
Do you guys have like an insurance business chant or something like that?
No, but my company does do drone insurance now, so.
Oh. Well, but again, this you know, this is a trend that we've talked about, this consolidation trend. I mean, and this is completely typical, I think, with what you often find in a new industry. You start out with a lot of relatively little companies that have point solutions or great ideas with maybe limited scope or with a certain scope. And then this process of consolidation where companies that would share synergies come together and start to form up larger companies or companies with a larger scope of operations. And Precision Hawk is right in there doing that.
And keep in mind that Precision Hawk is acquiring the structures beyond the aircraft. I mean, they make the aircraft, but these three companies are the data analytics, the customer base. You're looking at now consolidation and integration going not just vertical but horizontal out to acquire these companies so that they can be specific and, you know, cater towards those companies with a product and get a complete package service. So interesting times, Max. I guess we did say this year was going to be the year of consolidation since last year was the year of regulation and the year before that was the year of the DJI Phantom. Well, I guess every year is the year of the DJI Phantom, but it's interesting that we have seen these trends, these themes that grow each year, you know, and consolidation has been a big theme this year.
You know, one thing we haven't talked about, I don't think ever, David, is shape-shifting.
No, whales not, yes. I don't think we've ever done shape-shifting. Live shape-shifting canopy uses drones to keep guests in the shade. This is from newatlas.com, from the University of Stuttgart. The Cyber Physical Macro Materials Project, flying robots create intelligent architecture. In this example, an adaptive canopy changes its configuration as the sun changes position. Okay, Max, we usually talk about intelligent architecture referring to architecture involving computers. In this case, it's intelligent architecture, meaning that intelligent buildings.
Right, the physical architecture. And what we see here from the University of Stuttgart is a team of master's students, and they created a prototype system, and this was for their thesis project. And what this is a self-supporting roof structure that has a canopy that is made out of smart panels. Now, these smart panels connect with autonomous drones, and the drones have these grippers on them. So the drones can actually come in and add to, move, or remove these smart panels in order to achieve some objective. So the shape of the building or the actual physical structure is changed over time by these drones. And as you said, David, here what they've done is try to prototype this with a canopy that provides shade for the people underneath. And of course, as the sun moves during the day, the shade changes. So what these drones do is they come in and they kind of pluck the panels and reassemble them in different shapes so that the folks under the canopy remain in the shade. You know, it's kind of an application that is, you know, what you want to do for the end game. But in terms of a proof of concept, I think it's kind of brilliant.
Transformers, more than meets the eye. it's kind of, like you said, a good proof of concept. It's sort of, you sort of wonder, okay, how practical can this be? But, you know, all you need to do is have one of these drones drop a panel of one person's head and we're done. But the autonomy of it is kind of interesting, that the panels dictate tell the drone where to move it, which is really an interesting study when it comes to this stuff. It's the panels that are driving it, not the drone. The drone, again, is just the tool.
Well, there's a video in the article that's pretty good. It gives you a real good idea. And this is not an animation or something, but it shows the actual drones working with the actual small panels. The panels are, I would say, maybe roughly the size of the drone. So these drones are not moving huge, giant panels. They're a series of small components that together make up the structure. But, you know, if you can figure out how to do something like this, creating shade for people sitting in a park, it just sort of boggles the mind what other applications for buildings that transform themselves, adapt to different kinds of conditions. Sort of the sky's the limit, I guess.
Oh, did you have to go there?
That was pretty bad, I know.
Okay. We've got a very large hurricane bearing down on us, and us being a sizable chunk of the United States. AmericanSecurityToday.com, self-deploying drone pilots, a problem for hurricane response efforts. Now, last year, Max and I happened to know someone who actually deployed and was using a drone as a survey and a rescue thing. Our friend from Propeller Heads went down, but it's not something to be done freelanced. And that's where this article goes. Drones have proven themselves to be valuable emergency management after hurricanes, floods, wildfires, natural and man-made disasters. Well-intended drone pilots may be tempted to launch. This is one of those, sometimes helping is the best thing is not to try to help at all. What do you think, Max?
That's where this article goes. While recognizing certainly the value that drones provide in these kinds of situations, there is a tendency for people to just act in isolation by themselves. And there's some issues with that. For one thing, the drone flights can interfere with public safety and government agencies. They can interfere with the power company, the telecommunications company, trying to restore infrastructure. And they also point out in this article, this is something I didn't really think of off the top of my head when I was looking at this, David, is that sometimes the drone pilots find themselves being part of the problem, right? They go down into this type of an area and they could get stranded, no power, no gas, no food, no water. And, you could quickly become another victim of the hurricane or whatever the event is. But they also talk about how, real disaster response requires training. It requires coordination with authorities and deployment of the drone based on orders, not just because you as a loner think that, this is a great thing to do. There's one best practice, I would call it a best practice, that gets pointed out in this article. And the North Carolina Department of Public Safety has created a database. They call it the North Carolina Unmanned Aerial System UAS Disaster Response Database. And that's at ncdps.gov/UAS. And here's how they describe it. They say it provides local emergency managers and first responders with a list of qualified UAS pilots that are willing to provide services to their community. Participating UAS pilots have successfully completed their FAA Part 107 qualification and are North Carolina DOT certified government operators. This is a great idea, David. Let's basically gather up all the people that would like to help, that are qualified to help, that have the equipment to help, and get them into a government database so that government agencies or others who could benefit from their services can go in there and select drone operators to help out. I think that's a really, really intelligent approach to this.
And you can prep the pilots ahead of time. This is one of those being prepared ahead of time versus, showing up on the field and having the local law enforcement or the local first responders know what your capabilities are. So when you show up, they know how to utilize you as quick as possible, and you know how to work with their network. I mean, this is definitely the proper way to do this. And I think maybe all of the states should follow through with it and set up this kind of database, or maybe even a national database. That way we are doing the right thing. We're not hindering, we're helping. Everybody's response is do no harm, and we have too many reputations, like I said at the beginning of the show, where someone's flying a drone around a fire and a fire plane can't do its drop, and somebody loses their house for something that was really stupid. In this case, these are people who really know what the hell they're doing and want to do it, and they can help, and there's not a learning curve on the field, etc. So the author of this was Christopher Todd, and he's the founder and president of Miami-based Airborne Response, as well as the executive director of the Airborne International Response Team, or AIRT. He's an FAA-certified remote pilot, has operated unmanned aircraft systems both day and nighttime disaster response operations. He's a U.S. Coast Guard trained search and rescue instructor who specializes in high-risk missions and operated in the UAS and coordinated light evolutions with manned rescued aircraft, as well as internationally with foreign government entities. So he knows what he's talking about, and he's lived it. But preparation, if you want to help, help, but you do it the right way, and if you go and you offer your services and the first responders at the time don't have the ability to use you, just go back to being safe. Don't press the issue because they don't have time for you to be dealing with it.
I think this is a great article. We didn't touch on all the points that are made in the article, but if you are considering either now or in the future of, helping out during one of these kinds of disasters or events, it's highly recommended that you take a look at this article and just think about the things that are laid out there. It's well done. All right. Well, David, I think it's about time to wrap it up. We want to thank all of you for listening to episode 259 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at the uavdigest.com, but
ooh, drum roll, please.
I know. Also, just simply at uavdigest.com. Well, when David and I started this, when did we start this? 2013, I think it was, 5 years ago, something like that.
When did you retire?
Yeah, that was the year, 2013. So 5 years ago, I can't even remember who came up with the name, the UAV Digest, but the...
Robert Mark.
Rob did, huh? Well, the URL was not available. Somebody had it. So that's why we got the UAVdigest.com. Well, recently, the owner of UAVdigest.com offered to sell it to us. And so we thought about it and we bought the domain. So I know there's been some confusion in the past with people trying to find the the show and, you know, the UAV Digest and the and all of that. So right now, if you go to UAVDigest.com, it just redirects you to the UAVDigest.com. So it does that transparently. Maybe we'll kind of swap the two later, but for now, that's the way it works. So if you're trying to tell others about the show, you can tell them more simply, UAVDigest.com. Of course, we also have DronePodcast.com. So if that's even easier for someone to remember, give them that URL and they'll find us. At the website, of course, you'll find show notes for every episode, including this one. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, they're at uavdigest.com/259.
And of course, if you don't want to go out to the website, you can always find us on Facebook or Twitter, and both of those are at UAV Digest, or you can become part of our Slack listener team by sending us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, and we'll be happy to send you an invite. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store. And of course, all of the links to the show notes, again, are on our website, theuavdigest.com. Check out the videos and send us your own videos or feedback or emails or topics you might want us to discuss. So with that, I'm going to say this is David off to build an ark.
In Max in Hartford, where it's relatively dry.
Thanks for listening.